Welcome to NorthSquare Investments Active Insights Podcast. NorthSquare Investments is dedicated to bringing differentiated active investment strategies to financial advisors and investors through our multi-boutique asset management platform. Today, Mark Goodwin, Chief Executive Officer of NorthSquare Investments, will discuss taxable fixed income investing and the investment approach that C.S. McKee has utilized for institutional investors for decades. Mark Gensheimer, President of C.S. McKee, and Brian Allen, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager, will provide us with their insights and outlook for this sector of the market. C.S. McKee is a partner firm in the NorthSquare platform. Mark, Brian, and Mark, we look forward to your discussion.
Thanks, Diane. As you mentioned, at NorthSquare, we seek out best-in-class active managers for our platform, and our partners at C.S. McKee have a proven, repeatable approach to taxable fixed income investing. First of all, Mark, and Brian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Mark, your firm has primarily worked with institutional investors, so financial advisors and individual investors may not be so familiar with C.S. McKee. Can you give us some background on the firm and your investment team?
Sure, Mark. C.S. McKee, which is headquartered in Pittsburgh, has been in business for almost 90 years. We've managed assets for institutions since the early 1970s. About 50% of our clients are public entities, which includes states and counties and municipalities and fire and police. And the rest are split pretty evenly between endowments and foundations, Taft-Hartley plans, hospitals, religious organizations, and insurance companies. About $6 billion of our over $7 billion of assets are investment-grade fixed income portfolios, and our three senior portfolio managers, Brian, and Jack, have worked together for over 20 years, which, as you know, is pretty unique in our industry.
Thank you, Mark. Brian, as you know, taxable fixed income is a pretty broad range of investments that you and your team consider when building income-producing strategies. Can you tell us how you develop an overall portfolio strategy with an objective to both deliver performance and manage risk?
Certainly. Our process is largely bottom-up. We spend the vast majority of our time working on security selection within our individually defined sectors. But we do start the process with a view towards the macro-level environment. We are not economic forecasters, and we don't attempt to define a single most favored forecast, but we want to get an idea of which way the market's leaning, what the macro level factors point to, and help us frame the portfolio in terms of guidelines and basically guardrails when it comes to asset allocation going forward. Once that's done, we begin to implement our team approach with respect to duration, yield curve, and sector allocation. And then we move on as the individual teams, really with a focus on security selection. Portfolios are always at least a benchmark average in quality. We overweight credit to a small degree as our sort of baseline approach. We are always underweight BBB securities and otherwise look to approach the market in ways that allow us to consistently outperform. One of our hallmark characteristics is that we tend to outperform in up markets by about 110% of benchmark returns, but we really add value in risk avoidance and downside capture minimization, if you will. It all adds up to a very consistent stream of performance, lower volatility, and generally higher liquidity than you'll find in a passive portfolio.
Brian, the market is a very dynamic thing, and we've seen that especially so in the first quarter of this year. How often are you looking at your investment process, and what general time frame are you looking at as you consider how you build out your portfolio strategy?
The process itself has been in place the entire 22 years I've been with the firm. We spend, again, about 80% of our time looking at security selection within our respective sectors. And the idea with individual purchases, frankly, a portfolio turnover is higher than you'll see for most core fixed income portfolios. It tends to run about 130 to 150% per year on average. And as such, our time frames, we tend to look at a 3-month to 1-year time frame with respect to some of the macro level inputs, call it sector allocation and duration and or yield curve biases. But at the individual security level, it tends to be anywhere from, it could be as short as hours if it's a new issue that comes at a steep discount, and then prices are performed aggressively after the fact. And in many cases, it could be 6 to 9 months, depending on what our targets are at the time of purchase.
Thank you, Brian. When you think about the broad fixed income universe, there's such an array of securities that you can choose from. How do you go about distilling that into a workable set of potential investments to use in your strategies?
Yeah, here's where our approach tends to be most drastically different than your typical core manager. We implement an approach in both credit and in the government space that, if anything, is sort of diametrically opposed to what you'd expect. In the corporate space, we narrow the universe of several thousand securities down to the top 250 issuers. There we find higher than average liquidity, more dealer firms making a market, higher than average quality overall. So we have price discovery in all markets. One of the strengths of our credit approach is that we share our inventory with most of the street. And as their collective balance sheets have shrunk over the post-Great Financial Recession timeframe, they quite often are looking for liquidity themselves, and we can provide it to them at the right price. So we're very active in swapping our holdings for something similar, either by issuer, credit quality, and maturity, and doing so at advantageous prices. In the government space, quite the opposite. The government sector of the market is only about 1%, depending on the benchmark, between 1 and 4% of the total composite or the total benchmark. In our case, though, we are very active in that space. We look well beyond the types of securities that appear in the benchmark. They don't, because of issuer or size to a certain degree or coupon structure, but we do find a very unique world where liquidity and flow is more than meets our standards, yet there are structures there we find to be fundamentally mispriced. So one of the long-lasting features of our portfolio is an underweight to mortgage pass-throughs, which is a very large component of most benchmarks, ag and intermediate ag in particular. Those are sectors where the Fed has been involved, and they tend to suppress the relative value opportunities that occur in that space. We can trade one basically government-backed callable security, otherwise known as a mortgage, for others, agency debentures that have similar credit quality and are display some degree of negative convexity. But for the units of risk we're taking, we find much more advantageous valuations there. And frankly, as a $6 billion firm, we can take advantage of opportunities that firms that are 100 times our size simply can't.
That's great, Brian. I know that being nimble is part of your DNA. And as you look through the wide array of securities that you can invest in, choosing the specific ones is important as you build out individual portfolios for your clients. Can you take us through how the selection process plays out in a practical sense?
Sure. At the individual security level, again, with credit, we're very active in the new issue market. You know, we're working from a fairly concentrated buy list. Names we're very familiar with, trading levels we're very familiar with, and relative value among the names in that, those industries and within that select group of total issues. And again, with very specific levels in terms of buys and targets for a sell, both positive and negative, we assess relative value. Also, we're very active in the secondary market. Again, I mentioned relative value opportunities, largely market liquidity required or motivated by market liquidity needs, present us with opportunities not to hit the proverbial home run trade, but much more a singles and doubles approach. It's fairly consistent, and that's a key part of why our performance year in and year out is better than the benchmark. We've outperformed 12 of the last 13 years, I believe 18 of the past 20. So on balance, we are outperforming the benchmark, net of fees, and doing so with less volatility. In the government space, again, we focus on a wide array of securities. The most popular these days are intermediate and long maturity callable securities. Those are benchmark included. but there again, with spikes in volatility, much like we had in March of this year, they become unusually cheap. That's driven not only by macro level factors like the move in rates and volatility spikes, but also as you approach a quarter or a calendar year end, we find that the street has very limited appetite to hold risk on their balance sheet, and therefore can be at times a little overly aggressive, if you will, when it comes to lightening up on balance sheet holdings. Those security price markdowns look very attractive to us, and with our portfolio, which is always steeped in liquidity and quality, we have the capacity to take on risk when it makes most sense.
As you look at new opportunities that arise, you know, how do you shift your allocation to add these new securities to the portfolio? Do you sell out of existing positions or try to do trimming on the margins?
Really a combination of both. If it's a security trade which totals less than 1% of the total portfolio, if the sector manager decides it's a good relative value swap within their sector, those trades are done of their own volition. If we're looking at trades that are beyond 1% of total market value or include a move from one sector to another, then the entire team is involved. A vote is taken after some fairly lively discussion on the relative value merits of both the buy and sell candidates. And that, coupled with updated scenario analysis and a review of our outlook for the market, will ultimately determine if it's a swap candidate or we're actually going to increase or decrease total portfolio risk.
Thanks, Brian. Sell discipline is often one of the most important things to keep a manager out of trouble in managing their portfolio management process. Can you talk about sell discipline for a bit and how it works within the team?
Yes, for us, that's one of our most important, as we discussed recently, with respect to our performance characteristics and minimizing downside capture. Risk mitigation and risk management is really a key portion of our process. If you look at something on paper, you'll see the top-down view followed by security selection, and then risk management is the third step. But it's really a very circuitous process or repetitive process where risk management is involved at every step of the process and is continuously applied whenever we take positions on anything active relative to our benchmark or to total returns in absolute form. We identify both target sales and loss limits in terms of that exposure, and it takes, frankly, an act of the entire team, a revision in our outlook before those guidelines are violated or the initial trade plans are somehow altered.
Thank you, Brian. Turning to you, Mark, C.S. McKee has been named a top gun manager of the decade by PSN for 11 consecutive years. That's really remarkable. First of all, congratulations. How have you folks managed to build this consistency, particularly given that volatility we have seen in certain periods over that time frame?
You know, Mark, it all really stems from adhering to our process and, of course, having the team together for so many years. But while consistent returns are certainly important, our risk-adjusted performance characteristics are what we are definitely most proud of. And as Brian mentioned before, particularly the downside protection that we've always provided our clients.
And Mark, with your focus on quality issuers, C.S. McKee has always looked for strong governance when evaluating investments. I noticed that more recently you've signed on to the United Nations Supported Principles for Responsible Investing, which is a significant commitment moving forward. Can you talk about why you decided to sign on to the UNPRI?
Sure. Well, we believe that we've always invested our clients' assets responsibly. We believe that we can always continue to be more cognizant of the many environmental and social and governance issues that are so important in the long-term management of any great company. And we just think that we have a lot to learn from other members of the UNPRI and hopefully be able to provide some value ourselves. So we really look forward to being an active member.
How has this impacted your investment process and the way you evaluate specific securities?
You know, our clients and consultant partners have always viewed McKee as an extremely high-quality manager, so it really hasn't affected our core investment process at all. I guess I would say the additional ESG screens that we've built internally are more of an enhancement to an already solid, time-tested investment-grade fixed income process.
would you say that this broader ESG commitment filter works its way through to all of your fixed income strategies?
I think it does. You know, all of our portfolios are managed using the same process with the same team. The only difference with the portfolios are duration and whether or not we hold credit securities in specific portfolios.
Thank you, Mark. Brian, during most of 2020, we've experienced an unusual economic environment, to say the least, and this has had a somewhat uneven impact across the U.S. economy. Where do you see the economic environment currently, and what's your outlook for the economy and fixed income markets in 2021?
Yeah, we're definitely emerging from the depths of the sell-off, certainly in financial markets, but the economy as a whole showed signs of recovery in the summer and fall. We're relapsing to a certain extent, both the U.S. and globally, with the spike in the virus and concerns about mutation of the original diagnosed virus. That, coupled with the conclusion of some elements of the CARES Act and support to the market, thankfully now to be replaced to some degree by the most recent budget approval over the weekend, gives us a fair amount of hope for next year. Economic terms are outlook for growth, GDP of about 4%. We see inflation ticking higher. We'll certainly see a spike in inflation in the second quarter of the new year, largely due to just a year-over-year base effects. We do think that inflation will drift higher through the course of 2021. And we're looking for right around 2%, a little over that level, as we get to the fourth quarter of next year. Our real concerns, frankly, now is translating that economic outlook to the portfolio. The markets, we think, are somewhat ahead of themselves in terms of a discounting, a complete recovery. That's certainly true in the degree to which corporate spreads have tightened, to the low level of volatility in the interest rate market. We are, frankly, relying on the fact that given the sort of show of force that the central government put in place with Treasury and Fed back in March, that they will continue to support the markets. There's effectively a Fed put below most risk market valuations. We have cut back a portion of our risk allocation as a result. And again, not unusual for us. We tend to be nimble when it comes to changes in short-term valuations. We can do so on the margin to the benefit of performance, and that's where we stand right now.
So as you look out from here, where do you think the best opportunities for taxable fixed income portfolios lie in this market?
Usually, I'd say the long end of the market is really where most of the opportunity lies. Again, there's been a significant recovery in pricing of those assets. That tends to, that does pale in comparison to short maturity, just due to the math, spread duration in the short end and the Fed's focus on buying securities or backstopping securities in the 5-year and under maturity range. Valuations there are fairly tight. We're actually finding a little better, more attractive relative value in the securitized space in the 0 to 5 year range. We're also very active in the asset-backed market within the securitized space. Historically, we were very focused on the large, more liquid deals, but we do find now, again, taking advantage of our size, we can uncover relative values in subprime auto lending. Some of the more seasoned subordinate tranches have now improved in terms of credit support. Really, our AAA securities that just haven't been reviewed and upgraded to AAA. To the extent that our clients' guidelines allow us, we will pursue AA rated securities, taking on what appears to be slightly more quality risk. But again, when you look deeper at the individual holdings themselves, they pay to take the risk that we really don't think is there. And again, with a firm our size, we can build a more meaningful position while maintaining liquidity than someone that's much larger.
Brian, 2020 has seen a remarkable number of new issuances of bonds among the marketplace in an attempt to build liquidity. Do you think that's going to moderate into 2021 as corporations bleed into the cash that they've raised in 2020?
Most definitely. Total issuance in the high-grade market in 2020 was approaching $1.9 trillion, definitely an all-time high. Firms, when given the opportunity, especially in the first and second quarters, issued a very safe level or very conservative in their view of future liquidity needs. And as a result, cash on balance sheets has gone up at last count somewhere between $350 billion and $400 billion. As a result, we've seen a number of firms already begin to bring new issues to market smaller than had been expected before, and with a number of, on balance, older issues being retired, so almost a net reduction in new issuance already for the balance of this year, certainly going into 2021. We expect about a one-third reduction in total issuance over the course of the year, and for those exaggerated or unusually high cash balances to be drawn down.
Thank you, Brian. Over time, we've seen an increasing growth in passive investment strategies, both in the institutional and retail channels, in equities as well as fixed income. Can you talk about advantages of C.S. McKee's active style of fixed income management for investors who may be considering using passive for fixed income exposure?
Definitely. Now, our long history shows that with our fairly conservative approach with respect to managing core fixed income assets, we can consistently deliver better than benchmark returns net of fees, certainly justify an active approach in that sense. But unlike others, we don't outperform simply by taking on more risk. That isn't a permanent feature of our portfolios to any degree. That's evidenced by any number of our portfolio characteristics for almost any time frame that you look at. Sharpe ratio information, trainer, downside capture, they're all more attractive than you'll find with a passive investment. And we do think now in particular, it makes sense to look at an active manager who has long demonstrated superior downside capture ratios. Interest rates are admittedly low globally by any standard, certainly in real terms, artificially suppressed by central banks worldwide. And while we think that core fixed income still offers one of the better diversifying elements of a balanced portfolio, we certainly have to be aware of the risk that exists with not only lower rates, but longer durations in fixed income benchmarks. So as a result, we are always balancing a trade-off between earning enough in active returns to exceed our benchmark fees, or I should say our fees versus the benchmark, and protecting principal, where we continue to be an old school approach when it comes to core fixed, really focused on our role within a broad portfolio. And our role is to provide diversification and liquidity and not to assume risk or try to demonstrate the ability to carry a portfolio over the long term in the fixed income portion of a broadly diversified benchmark portfolio.
Thank you, Brian. Mark, can you share how you see an active taxable fixed income strategy being best positioned in the diversified portfolio of an individual investor?
Sure. You know, I personally believe that every portfolio should have some investment grade fixed income holdings, you know, really just to provide stability to their higher risk holdings. And we are definitely a pure, high quality investment grade manager that will always provide strong downside protection when there is instability in the credit markets. And you know, there's certainly been a lot of growth in the sectors that we manage that really reflect that. So I really think it definitely should be part of every portfolio.
Thank you, Mark. Mark, Brian, Mark, thank you for joining me today. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for tuning in to our North Square Active Insights podcast. For more information on North Square Investments, our partners, and investment solutions, please visit our website at www.northsquareinvest.com. Nothing contained in this communication constitutes tax, legal, or investment advice. Investors must consult their tax advisor or legal counsel for advice and information concerning their particular situation. This podcast contains certain statements that may include forward-looking statements. Although C.S. McKee believes that the expectations reflected in these forward-looking statements are reasonable, they do involve assumptions, risks, and uncertainties, and these expectations may prove to be incorrect. Actual events could differ materially from those anticipated in these forward-looking statements as a result of a variety of factors. you should not place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. This podcast reflects C.S. McKee's views and opinions as of the date herein, which are subject to change at any time based on market and other conditions. We disclaim any responsibility to update these views. These views should not be relied on as investment advice or an indication of trading intention.